I am happy to announce our 2024 Banking with Life client-only event. It's going to happen Friday, October 25th, beginning with a pre-event social mixer. The day of the event is Saturday the 26th, followed by an after party. It's going to happen downtown Fort Worth. I will be speaking there. Others will be speaking as well. You'll have the opportunity to meet me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you. You'll have the opportunity to meet the whole Banking with Life team and a room full of people that practice the infinite banking concept from all over the country. Last year, we had about 130 people from 30 different states. The year before that was really good, too. This year is going to be even better. We're going to have educational presentations and talks, and that should be important to you if you're practicing the infinite banking concept. I can't wait to see you. In this episode, I sit down with my friend Liz as she shares her experience with the infinite banking concept and how she would like women, mothers, and families to know the financial opportunities that the infinite banking concept can provide. We had fun and hope you enjoy listening. And if you think about it, if people would have the discipline, you go borrow money, the credit card at 20%, you're not going to miss a credit card payment. Right. Just think this through. At 29%. Some states are outrageous. You know, I don't know what the limit is, but by the time you have a late fee or service fees or card fees or whatever, the cost of that capital goes above the stated interest rate. Okay. And then, and it's a higher rate. But just think about the discipline that you have to make sure you're not late on bills. If you treated your own capital and your own cash flows with that much discipline, you'll win.
Right.
Okay. So I pay a premium. There's a cash value. I collateralize that cash value. It does nothing to the policy except create an outstanding loan that's fully guaranteed and collateralized by the cash value.
Yep.
So if I take that capital and reduce the loan or eliminate a debt, and then I take that payment that was going to the debt and I create a loan repayment to the policy, it comes available, loan repayment or premium becomes available, you know, 30 days from the receipt on average. And now I do it again and again and again.
Right.
So now I'm not spending my time getting out of the hole that I've dug in debt, right? I'm spending my time learning this concept and building a correctly structured policy. I talk about the noise and structure all day long on purpose, but there are reasons. Okay. And so I'm creating a loan over here, and ultimately that is going to be one of the last loans I repay. All right. So, and I've got to maintain discipline through the whole process. And then if you maintain that discipline, all of this 35% of the every dollar going through your hand that's going away from you in debt will wind up in a private banking entity system that you own, a dividend paying whole life insurance. And it's a true win-win. So, and then going beyond that, and I know this is conversational, 30,000 foot view, but if you just put that out on a timeline, let's say I took 7 years to get out of debt, and then I can spend the next 7 years building capital.
Right.
If I start now, I'll have a 14-year timeline of building capital. Right. And okay. So building capital. Now I'm stacking the time.
You didn't wait 7 years to get out of debt to start building your capital. You started building capital on day one.
Right.
And that 7 years of getting out of your credit card debt or whatever debt you're knocking out, you've created capital. You've created an asset for yourself.
That's right.
Right. And so now you're 7 years in, you've already got something that is going to open up doors for you that you can't even imagine yet because you've been crushed by having to owe it to somebody else, right?
No question. But if you look at that 7 years, almost, I used to call it stacking time because it's the equivalent almost or akin to stacking time. If I spend the 7 years building capital and getting out of debt, right, at the end of that 7 year time period, and I'm just picking numbers, you know, they'll move around a little bit, but the concept is true and the numbers are true. When your numbers will be true. So I spent 7 years capitalizing, and I'm going to continue to capitalize after that, I assure you, and you will too, when you understand what's going on and all the characters are in the play, you understand who they are. Okay. Then I spend the next 7 years paying down the debt that I created with the policy, but I've been paying premium and loan repayments the whole time.
Yeah.
All right. So there's two different cash flows. You got to have a premium to the company and you got to have the loan repayment. So then you take it out another 7 years. Now, I know this is longer than most people want to talk about or think about or whatever, but just go look at your youngest child and tell me how you know, quick time has passed.
Yeah.
So if I go out another 7 years, I'm in 21. If you take that 21-year time period where I got out of debt and I was building capital the whole time, and now the loans are all repaid to the policy, you look at the values of that policy compared to you getting out of debt for 7 years and accumulating 7 years and then letting 7 years of growth, whatever that may be, on the capital that you accumulated. And you win hands down every time. There's always an exception to the rule. I shouldn't say every time, but.
But, you know, 99.9% of the time.
Yeah.
Unless, you're gonna win. Unless you, you know, overextend yourself on your own policy and you don't keep up with it and you can't.
Lack of this one. Yeah.
And that's really the only caveat here. It is your responsibility to stay positive on this and to not overextend yourself. It is your responsibility, but this is your asset too, you know? So.
Oh, and then I don't know how old you are, but if you're in your 40s and or 50s when you're doing all this, and then you're coming and knocking on the passive income time, you know, and then, oh, this asset produces passive income, which is what we wanted. And what you don't spend and what you don't give away in your whole lifetime, you're going to leave to someone else. You might as well leave it to your people or whomever it is you wish to leave it to privately. Right. Bypassing probate. There's so many benefits and characteristics to life insurance. And if you understand them, and like I said, and I'll say it again, you don't have to be a life insurance expert. If you have a fundamental understanding, you won't get stuck in the noise and buy these jank Frankenstein policies. You'll understand and know enough to build a policy that will last you your whole lifetime and serve you well, right? And then even past your lifetime into the next generation or two. It's pretty dang powerful.
Yeah, so. It really is, because it, in a moment, you know, my whole life just absolutely shifted. And because I found a way that was safer to manage my money and keep it and grow it and manage it, I created a situation where capital attracts opportunity, right? And so now I have all these opportunities. I've diversified into different businesses because of it, and different business opportunities that have come along. And how do you get to seven streams of income? You have to have ways to invest into other people and other ideas and other things, because you have to multiply your time. You only have so much time in the day. And so, you know, then you start looking at other investments, but you get to choose what those investments are.
Get to vet them. I've said many times, this will help you vet an investment, quote unquote. Why is that, James? Because the life insurance policies are going to do very well. And the older I get, the fatter I get, the more lazy I get, which I'm not lazy. I'm a little overweight. I'm all American. You know, what used to look like a deal to me, I'm just not interested. I don't have to deal with renters. I don't have to deal with repairs or taxes or whatever the case may be. The money's doing just fine right there.
Right.
You know, but, you know, in my younger years, it was like, no, I've got to have that capital doing this and that. And I've done a lot of that, and I haven't done everything. I'm not the guy that's been everywhere and done everything. I'm not. I'm just saying, as we mature, you know, simplicity, the virtue of simplicity becomes more pronounced and more profound, you know. So I digress. But how was that for a 30,000-foot overview of the get out of debt? Was that?
I think that was pretty good. I mean, it's really hard. I know it's hard for people to wrap their head around without hard numbers. But everybody's situation is different. Yeah. But if the overarching idea that we could get across to people, and I hope people take away from this conversation, is that they can use the money that they are earning right now to create an asset and to get out of debt with that asset from day one, if they're dedicated to do it, and then have something that when the debt is paid off, they've created a vehicle where not only now your debt's paid off and you have done the work and you have become disciplined, and when the next opportunities come along, you're not going to be like, oh man, I wish I had the money. You're going to know you've got it. You know, you're going to know that you can say yes.
What's that like, Liz?
It is absolutely life-changing. Absolutely life-changing.
It changes your whole financial perspective, doesn't
it? Right. Yeah. And it makes you less afraid of never having enough money, because you know you're putting it somewhere where no one can take it from you.
That's very powerful. You know, so, and I agree with that. You know, you, and let me say that you don't have to have, I know that you see illustrations of 10,000 a year, 20,000 a year, 500,000 a year, 200. It doesn't have to be large numbers.
No.
You know, yeah. It does not. You can start where you are at. Right. And that is good enough. Just starting is a big deal. Right. Once you start and head down the road, then the momentum, your confidence level goes up, your understanding goes up. I mean, in all of that, it even in addition to all of that, it helps you avoid the noise.
Yeah.
You know, if you become focused and you have a path and you put discipline on it, it makes sense to you and you've vetted it and you understand it and you're working with people that are competent and able and that you like and that you trust. And I mean, the confidence goes up. And I'm telling you, the noise gets muffled out.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nelson, you say it's like putting on a noise canceling headset.
Yeah.
And it is,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. When somebody comes along and they got this bright, shiny thing and look at all these numbers and look what I can do for you, you're like, really? Sure. Show me. Yeah, I got a better deal than that. I'm doing much better than that, you know? And they can't distract you.
I've been practicing, you know, I've always, my whole life, had a trouble saying no and no thank you, you know, because I'm like, a giver or you know, I can do anything. I just can't do everything. That's my mindset, that I can do anything. And I literally believe that, but I can't do everything. So here's where I'm going with that. I'm learning some new language for myself. Right. And so if people come at me today with an opportunity, quote unquote, air quotes, right? Because it's always an opportunity.
There's
right?
always one.
Right. And then the world is full of legitimate, good quality opportunity. I am not a pessimist, you know, or naysayer. I'm an optimist. You know, I'm a capitalist. I believe in capitalism. And I understand that when we practice capitalism, when you practice capitalism, you cannot help but make other people wealthy that
yes.
you don't know with no intention, right? There's the wonders of true capitalism are fabulous. But here's my new language. You know, just use you as a guinea pig. Liz, that sounds like a wonderful idea. You're presenting me with an opportunity, right? Quote unquote. Liz, that sounds like a wonderful idea. However, I'm not going to be able to take advantage of that opportunity at this time.
Mm-hmm.
But if it changes, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
How's that? This is growth for me. I'm
you
just
know,
saying.
That is brilliant. But you know what I have learned over these years is, because I am also a giver and a don't rock the boat and keep everybody happy and I don't want anybody to be mad at me. My new favorite word is no.
Just no, straight
just
out no.
no.
I love the simplicity.
Like,
no.
You know, that does sound great. That's not for me, though, but thank you.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
I might leave off the end of it. If it changes it, I'll let you know, because it's probably not going to change.
I mean, you know, and that is a very diplomatic way to do it, and use the one that works for you in the situation you're in. But
yeah,
my new favorite word is no. I don't have to make you happy.
I would probably practice that in like five languages. No. Knit, nine.
They all sound about the same, right?
Yeah. You know, that's cool. So let me ask you a couple of questions. I don't want to derail you. Anything you want to talk about?
No,
we keep going. So what you've done, looking back over what you've done and what you've experienced, do you feel like, and it's almost like a layup question, I don't mean it that way at
yeah.
all, but your father was in life insurance and your grandfather was in life insurance. Surely you got to think that they'd be proud of you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like I said, I really and truly, when I found this and I the concept hit me and I went, oh, it's really this simple.
Yeah.
And then, it's right in plain sight.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to hide something, is right there out in the open.
Well, you've been told your whole life insurance, and your daddy and your grandfather heard it. Probably your daddy heard it more than your grandfather.
But
I don't know.
The fact that they didn't use it the way that it could have been used. I just feel it, that my dad is like, oh, I missed it.
Yeah.
You know, I missed it.
Well, when you graduate, you can have that conversation.
We will have that conversation. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I like imagined that he's hanging out with Nelson already. And that's why
sure.
that ended up in my feed.
Right. And so do you feel like that, and I'm really not trying to put words in your mouth,
yeah.
but I can't imagine that you wouldn't feel like that you're carrying on a legacy where you received an inheritance. I don't know if your grandfather left your father or your parents an inheritance.
He did.
Or,
okay. Yeah, no.
And it, so then you're doing it again. Yeah. I mean, didn't that, you know.
And I know the numbers of what my grandparents left to my dad and his sister and what they split. And I saw that number. Well, my dad 10X'd what he left to them. But he was, he more than 10X'd it. But it was.
He might have been a better life agent than you.
He didn't do it through life insurance policies, though, because the policy that we got was actually very minimum in the whole scheme of the assets. But what he did do was he put it all in a trust. He had a trust that he put all his assets into, and so we didn't have to deal with probate.
Right.
Except for one item that didn't get put in the trust.
Right.
You know, and so that was amazing, because not only did it change my life in a moment, it also made it that I didn't have to stress about waiting for the money or somebody coming along and saying, hey, you know.
Was that your grandfather leaving?
It was my father. My father leaving to me. But he had already 10X'd what he got from his parents. Mm-hmm. That my brother and I got to split. So that was pretty incredible.
That's a big deal.
You know, it is a big deal. And but he didn't really try real hard. He actually, you know, the things that he said to me near the end, because I was taking care of him, he was just like, I just wish I'd done this, or I'd taken more chances, or done the things that I love to do, because he loved to fly. Mm-hmm. He wanted to. He became a pilot. He had a Cessna in the 70s. And then when I was born, I think he'd already sold it. But, you know, he's like, man, if I'd kept that, what it would be worth today? Yeah. Oh, you know, my best friend went off and he left insurance and went off and did his dream of flying. And, you know, he brokered airplanes all over the United States. And he even was sending them overseas and stuff too, like going and finding Cessnas. And my dad would go with him and they'd fly across the country together. And he'd call me and he'd be like, I'm in Phoenix tonight and da 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 da, hanging out with Tom. And that's so cool. And he, at the end, was just like, I wish I had tried. I wish I hadn't have been afraid, you know? And I'm like, wow, you know, was it that he was just afraid because he was stuck in his mind, or was he afraid because he was afraid that he wouldn't have the finances to catch him, you know? So I think that if he had known how to do this, he would have taken that policy he had and would have been able to build it up, build the cash value faster. He would have created other with PUAs. I don't think that one had a PUA. I don't know. But
if it did, it had a PUA only to receive the dividend. It wasn't a dynamic PUA that you could directly pay a premium into if he had one.
Right? Yeah.
And so, you can cut this out if you don't like it, but do you feel like you'll be able to do the same with your legacy? Do you feel like, you know, it may be too personal, but you'll be able to 10X what you're?
I'm just so excited that I don't have to. Like, the thing that made me so excited about this is that I was pregnant at the time I found this. So I knew I had somebody that was going to need me to do well for him, to set him up and do things better. Like, my grandparents actually did an amazing thing for me. They bought CDs when I was born for me. And by the time I went to college, the money they had put in those CDs had accrued so much that it paid for half of my college.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I worked in the summertime and I got a good high paying job during the summertime. It was incredible. What a blessing. But so I have no student debt, you know, and I know that whatever my son decides he wants to do, he's going to have no debt because I've already accrued for him. Yeah. The cash value of whatever that is that he wants to fund to go and do, right?
I love that.
Yeah. So I am blown away at all the doors that are opened to my son, my future, you know, and I've been able to go into, you know, like, oh, I want to do this business, and I can go ahead and just take a loan to get the capital to start the business, and now that business is paying me.
Perfect.
You know, and so like, and I get to do that again and again.
So you're repaying loans as you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's tough to generally tough, not always, but generally it's tough when you have to borrow money to start a business,
right.
You know, generally.
Right.
I was going to ask you something that slipped my mind. It happens.
It'll come back.
Is there other things that
so
you want to bring up?
The dangers of the noise out there, because there's just one in particular thing that I keep seeing in my feed everywhere about, and it's probably because of the things I research, but maybe not everybody's coming across this, and it's just me because this is this kind of like stuff I like to do for fun. I like to look at ways to save on taxes and, you know, things to write off for my businesses and so on and so forth. But this IUL thing,
Index Universal
Life, is just getting pushed all over the place by these young kids. Influencers don't know any different. Like, they're probably into that company that I almost went to. Pushing this. And what I remember hearing when I watched the videos about somewhere, Nelson said that these things are like zombies because at some point they eat themselves. And I'm like, these are so dangerous. And so I put comments out there under their videos to be like, hey guys, just, you know, like, have you thought this through?
Like, do you get beat up? Do you get attacked?
A little, but yeah. I'm trying to flip them.
Yeah. You know, it's a, I'm a pretty busy guy, you know, I mean, relatively. And when I, It's entertaining for me sometimes when I look at the comments on different life insurance, you whatever it is, when it comes to life insurance and IBC or whatever, infinite banking on social media, to stroll through the comments, man, it's like the blind leading the freaking blind.
So true.
You know, but, and it's, and I'm not surprised, but you said dangers, and I knew you. She wrote down IUL before we turned the mics on, right? And I told her that, you know, I have three short videos that I talk about IUL on a very 30,000 foot view of the what's wrong with them and why they're wrong and what's likely going to happen. But then I also shared with her, and I'll share with you now, that, you know, I'm currently in the middle of doing a very in-depth dive into IUL because I see it all the time too. Yeah. And see these young people, God bless them, they don't know what they think they know. And then you have the guys in the IBC world or in the world of infinite banking, and they slam on the guys, the infinite banking or whole life. They slam on the whole life guys as if they just don't know, right? If you structure it just right, then all of those things don't happen. And it's the same argument that in the world of infinite banking, we're trying to go cash on cash as soon as possible. So you have to contort the policy structure, and it's, they don't know or they don't care the fragility that adds to a whole life policy. So the IUL guys that are saying, yeah, you can do infinite banking with IUL, they don't want to mention what Nelson wrote about IUL and becoming your own banker. And he mentions it. There's one page there. He mentioned that he'd never sold it, and he certainly wouldn't buy it, quote unquote. But it's the same argument. Well, those guys don't know how to structure it just right. So it's like you know, the financial agent guru have discovered a life insurance company's software to build an illustration, and you can manipulate the numbers so it never shows a mech, right, or whatever. It's the same argument, just applied to a different product.
Right.
But there's a... And Nelson gives you the background of Universal Life. So originally, it was Universal Life, came out by E.F. Hutton investment firm. You know, E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens. That used to be their slogan. So the stockbrokers wanted to compete with the life insurance industry, right? Because life insurance was paying more than bonds, and you know, you have all the wonderful characteristics of just typical life insurance in the 70s. Right. Didn't even have the dynamic PUA, and whole life is wearing them out. So they we want to be all things to all people. So we go to the insurance companies and say, hey, man, we want to, you know, be able to compete with whole life insurance, and, you know, you can make a name and be famous for yourself. AXA, you know, I don't want to beat them up too bad, but okay. And then you had Ralph Nader coming along about the same time, the consumer protectionist. Oh my gosh, you got to protect the people that don't know anything, can't think for themselves, from these evil life insurance companies. You know, and that's continued throughout, you know, Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, and all the other guys. Gary North is like, oh my God, you know what the insurance agent makes in commission? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I want to know what they make for saying those things. Yeah, that's right. What I want to know.
Yeah, well, you don't accumulate $50 million
an awful
in
lot of money to say certain things and be a talking head for certain things
without a license, so you can say anything, and then you get promoted. Yeah, where do they tell you to put their money? I wonder who is paying them.
Yeah,
you talk about how much. I wonder who's paying them.
I got opinions, and I'm going to try real hard not to say them.
Yeah, I love you. I appreciate you. Say what you want to say. Okay. So you have this coming against the life insurance companies, right? And the life insurance companies, we've talked about many times, they wouldn't even defend themselves. You know, the only thing worse than a bad argument is a weak defense. I mean, they don't even embrace their heritage back to your grandfather's day, your grandfather's days, right? Who are you? Go in the basements and look at your records, life insurance companies, see your heritage. I can go on, and I have, but I won't today. Okay.
Yeah.
So all this is coming, so it's like Ralph Nader, you want to unbundle whole life insurance because it's, you know, what is the rate of return? What is the cash value? What is this? And look at the cost of the death benefit. You not unbundle it so the poor, unsuspecting, unable to think American public can make a good decision, you know, narrowing it down to term and price of term for death benefit, the price of whole life or death benefit. And so the life insurance companies, they acquiesce. They want to be all things to all people, right? They want to be a financial services firm. So they came out with universal life. And you cannot unbundle whole life insurance, no matter how hard you try. You can't do it. But the best thing that they could do was come up with universal life. Have a side account that earns an interest rate. And then you have an internal rate of return, just a term life insurance. You're pricing the death benefit for the purest cost of the death benefit term. Well, wait, interest rates were about 10, 11, and 12% back then too. Well, who can't make those numbers look good if you have a 10% rate of or 12% rate of return or 10% rate of return on universal life? So you have the accumulation side, unbundled, the side account to earn an interest rate. And then you have that coupled with the pure cost of a death benefit, increasing term. That is the fundamental structure of universal life.
And that's the caveat right there. The increasing term, which has an increasing premium.
There's an increase. They call it COI, cost of insurance, in a universal life policy.
And that's the thing that nobody tells you.
Mm-hmm.
This sucker is going to suddenly one day, you're going to get a bill for your premium and you're going to be like, I have to pay what?
Yeah.
Where am I going to get that?
And then you're going to drop it.
And then you're going to drop it. You're going to be too old, possibly, or have something going on with you.
Can't qualify.
That you can no longer qualify to have a new asset, and you've just lost everything that you've done.
Yeah.
Everything's gone.
I say it all the time because it's true. You remember W.C. Fields? You may be too young. Black and white movie star. Look him up. Just Google W.C. Fields and 2 out of 3 ain't bad. He said, you know, one time in a film, it's like, well, the broker made money. The firm made money. And 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Who do you think the third one he's talking about? It's you, the consumer.
That's right.
That's the beginning of universal life. So look, as interest rates came down, then that 12, 10, 12% account wasn't doing it.
When you just said that right now, I went, oh my gosh, what are interest rates doing right now? This is so dangerous because people are going to hear the interest rates are going up. This is going to be even better for you now.
Yeah.
Like, this is the way to go.
Well, the life insurance companies are like, okay, well, interest rates are down. The cost of insurance, you know, oh, we're living longer and all of those things. The cost of insurance hasn't changed. It's still going to go up. You may be living longer. It just means you're going to be paying a higher premium or higher cost of insurance the older you get. So they came out with variable universal life.
Oh, that sounds great.
So now the side account is, they're like mini mutual funds. They're sub-accounts. So interest rate, we can't get 10 or 12% in interest rate we use for universal life. So we come out with variable universal life. Oh, I don't know, sometime in the 90s while the markets were going crazy. Mm-hmm. So the sub accounts, they can produce, you know, 10, 12%, right? Like everybody says, you asked earlier, where is this asset that I can get 12% year over year over year over year for the next 30 years?
Guaranteed.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. So they did the sub accounts with VUL. Since it's a security, now you have to have a license to sell securities, and it's coupled with the rising cost of insurance.
Yeah, I keep seeing these kids talk about, okay, so what it does is it goes into these, you know, into the, you get to play the stock market with this. And I'm like, Right. Oh, this is a horrible idea, people. Like, you know.
And then, along about 2000, because, you know, they obviously discovered by observation that the market doesn't always go up. Right. So that rate of return of 10 or 12% doesn't always filter down, net of fees, net of cost of insurance, policy fees, and all the other fees. So then they came out with equity indexed universal life. You don't actually have to put the side account is an index or a series of indices, S&P 500, whatever. They create their own on a daily basis. Who's they? Wall Street. Said, look, we just created this index for you, life insurance companies. Won't you use this? You'll pay us fees, but look at how you can illustrate it. So they came out with Index Universal Life, right, where your money's not actually in the market. We're just going to follow an index. And we just use this big upside. You can earn 110% a cap, you know, on this index. And the floor is zero. So they always say, well, you can't lose money. Oh, okay. Maybe in the index you can't lose money. You pay a premium. All of the costs come out, that net premium then is allocated to an index, and it may go up and it may go down. Let's say it goes down and you just earn zero. See, Liz, you didn't lose any money. You didn't earn any either. Yeah, and then the increasing cost of insurance comes out. So that's
I earned nothing to be able to pay for the premium that's coming.
Yeah. So if you carried that out long enough, because look, just draw an exponential curve. You know, if you're a visual person on a sheet of paper, there's an exponential curve. And this represents, you know, you, Liz, only have one exponential curve in your whole lifetime, only one. And you can start that and stop that as many times as you want to. And every time you do stop it, you've got to restart it. And with life insurance, there's an exponential curve. And if you have a whole life insurance policy or any life insurance policy, it's going to follow your life. Okay, so let's think this through. I don't want to get off of equity index universal life, and I'm not. So you draw the exponential curve. That is also the cost of insurance. So it does rise. It looks really, really good when you're young, the universal life. They illustrate fabulously.
Yeah.
Fabulously. Oh, and it's not a mech. And then there's a 7-pay test. It's the initial mech test. And then there are secondary mech tests. They occur going forward. All of this matters. It may be too much minutiae or too much detail, but I'm telling you, look at that exponential curve. That cost of insurance is going up on a guaranteed basis every year. And the company retains the right to increase it above what was illustrated.
Ooh.
Oh, just go Google up if you wish. Fine. If you don't, fine. IUL, Equity Index Universal Life. Oh, yeah. They dropped the equity, right? Oh, it's a marketing ploy. Now it's not EIUL. Now it's just Index Universal Life, right? Wonder why they did that. Okay. Just go Google up all of the lawsuit history. And there's a lot of lawsuits with all the life insurance companies, the mutual companies, stock companies, all of that. But look at the basis of the lawsuits. So the majority of the lawsuits on Index Universal Life, it is because of the cost of insurance, COI. And it increases on a guaranteed basis. And then the company, like I said, has a right to raise the cost of insurance above that. And hence, these policies, there's one day, it's a matter of time. The further out you go on that exponential curve, you're going to get a bill for $27,000 premium that you're only paying $2,000 for. And you were only paying $2,000, and the rest of that money was coming from the side account. So it was cannibalizing itself, hence the zombie policies.
So you're actually not accruing anything from that percentage because it's going towards paying the premium and keeping.
Well, you would accrue it, and if your premium is above your stated premium, the cost of insurance is above your stated premium, then it will take from that side fund to pay that difference.
Which, what are you building?
You're building profits for the life. That's the most profitable product a life insurance company has when it comes to life insurance by volume.
Yeah. Not for you.
Not for you.
For them.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I just thank you for going over that.
30,000. Yeah.
Sorry. I was just like, oh man. Mm. It is devastating because the scariest thing is these kids, they mean well. I know they do.
You know,
I know they do. Yeah. And they pump them up and they get them all excited and they're like cheerleaders and they're rah, rah, rah. And you're going to help people and make money and it's so great. And you're saving people.
$10,000
you're
going to
make so much money doing this. But they're not educating them.
They're not.
You know, there's very little material you have to study. And then you just go take a test. And if you pass that test, well, you can get licensed.
Oh, you're talking about licensure's license. Man, I like to say the only license that's easier to get than a life insurance license is a driving license, but I don't even know about that. Man, you got to schedule that. I think the life insurance license or the driver's license may be harder to get than an insurance license.
You do have to be able to take the test. You do have to understand the concepts enough to be able to take the test and pass it.
You got 90, 70s passing.
But just because you studied it and you crammed and you took that test doesn't mean that you even know anything yet.
Yeah.
Right. And then it takes time and experience to see what happens and what doesn't. And they just turn people over. They just churn people out. I mean, they're pushing all these salesy things.
It's and MLM model, you know, sell everybody you know, your friends and your family. And then they don't care when you run out of customers or clients. They have that book of business that you wrote, however profitable it is or is not for them. And then it's the next one and the next one. Then every now and then, you know, because it's like 90% of agents are out of business in the first year. Mm-hmm. The majority of those remaining are out of the business within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So they have to constantly bring in new people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I see it in, I see a lot of things in my practice. You know, I have clients in their 90s. I have clients in their teens. But I see an awful lot when people are nearing kind of retirement age, passive income time. They'll have a hodgepodge. They'll have an annuity because their brother-in-law sold annuities, or they have one that was rolled over from a 401k. And they may have a 401k. They may have an IRA. They may have a Roth IRA. They may have a little life insurance policy or a big one. Or they have all of these assets. They may have all of the things that they've created. But financially, it's very inconsistent. They're not congruent. You know, it's like an accumulation over a long period of time.
Yep.
And now what do I do? I'm out of the accumulation time period of my life.
Right.
And, you know, so I see a lot of that. Well, why'd you buy this? Or how'd you get this?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, my brother-in-law sold them. You know, it's like.
The worst part, okay, there's like two things that you brought up in there that I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, like I had a career for a while and I had. You know, they were putting into my TSP.
Yeah. Oh, government job.
I was like, great, TSP, blah, blah, blah. Well, then all of a sudden, they're like, we're going to do a retirement education 2-day thing.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants to come needs to sign up for it. And I tried to sign up for it. And they said, oh, no, you're not close enough to retirement yet. And I was like, but I have a whole career. I need to know how this works so that I can.
They wouldn't let you attend.
They wouldn't let me attend. They wouldn't let you attend unless you were like 3 or maybe 5 years from retirement. They wouldn't even let you attend. So you couldn't even learn about it. And then the amount of things that you could choose from were so few. Yeah. And there was zero education. And they had no intention of educating you until you were almost done. And then what are you going to do? What are you going to do that's going to make a difference for you long term, right? So you're just hoping that works. And okay, I guess I should just trust somebody because nobody ever educated me on finance.
Yeah, welcome to America.
Don't worry about that. We've got it for you. you just get out there and you go to work and live your life and have all your cute little toys and we'll let you finance whatever you want. And don't worry, there'll be something for you in retirement. We have Social Security and we have your, you know, retirement, your pension, your this, your that. Well, okay, let's just go ahead and jump to now.
Yep.
How many people under the age of 40 have a retirement fund, have a 401k, have a job that's even offering that anymore? How many jobs are full-time jobs that even have that as an option?
Yeah.
They've taken it all away.
I don't know the statistics, but I know people aren't saving enough money.
No.
The savings rate in America. And there's an absolute difference between saving and investing. The TSP is a thrift savings plan. Governmental jobs or governmental contractors have the ability to participate in that, akin to a 401k. It's just a qualified plan. America is not saving enough. And if you just think that through, you know, if we're all living paycheck to paycheck and running up a credit card, debts are, you know, never seeming to get ahead, something's got to change. You either have to spend less than you make or you have, period, period, period. Now, part of that equation, maybe you need to earn more. Okay. But you have to spend less than you earn from whatever source. And then you have to accumulate capital, period. Period, period. And then that takes discipline. Look, if we're talking about becoming your own banker, right? You're not relying on other people. You're not being dependent upon other people. Now, for the education, there's no question. There's tons of resources and sources that you can educate yourself with. And there's also a ton of noise out there. We've kind of talked about the noise. You know, we talked about the IUL and annuities, and we'll talk about whatever else you want to talk about. But you should be educated enough, in my opinion, and it's my encouragement to educate yourself enough to understand what the infinite banking concept is, right, therefore what it might can do for you and your family. And if you do that, you will also be educating yourself enough to identify the noise. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's key. If you go on, just like all of these things are being fed up to all of us on social media. I mean, I can talk about my Great Dane dog collar, and by the time I get home today, I'm going to have ads for Great Dane dog collars.
It is ridiculous. And here's, it's even worse. Just think about something. Don't actually say it out loud, and then see in the next 24 hours what advertisements you see.
You know, you said it, not me. My wife and I had that conversation not a month ago.
No, there's proof. There's proof. There's proof.
Really?
There's proof. Like, there are videos where they explain that.
I would like to, because that boggles my mind if that's in fact true.
And I mean, you know, don't take my word for it. Just test it out for yourself. Seriously.
I'm not kidding. We had the conversation. Yeah, it's like, you. So do you have... or how was that for IUL? Did we cover IUL?
I think that was phenomenal for IUL. I really appreciate that.
So covered getting out of debt, kind of the noise, the IUL. Noise,
the IULs, the annuities.
Talked about annuities.
The laddering thing.
Oh, yeah, the laddering thing.
Is there anything else that I might not have noticed or said today that I've forgotten about that is like a, oh,
man, you're listening. There's all kinds of things you
I mean,
think
I know
about
they always, up. Oh, you but, say something about HELOCs. That people will talk you into doing a HELOC.
Yeah, well, here's, and I'm not opposed to HELOCs.
Right.
I'm not. What I am opposed to is the marketing that you do the HELOC. Now, let's think about this. A home equity line of credit. So you're collateralizing the number one asset that the majority of Americans put their money in. That's where the majority of their wealth is in their home, the equity of their home, and in a qualified retirement plan, TSP, 401k, whatever it is, 403b, whatever it is, IRAs, the majority of their capital is there. The majority of their wealth is there. I am opposed to collateralizing one of the most valuable things that you have to get a HELOC. Right. And if you're going to borrow money, HELOC's a great way to borrow money. Don't misunderstand me. There's a place for it. What I'm talking about is then take the HELOC to buy a highly high cash value structured policy. Most of the time, 90% of the time that I have seen, they're Frankenstein policies. Right. So you have that very high cash value, 90-10, 85-15, 80-20, whatever it is. So then you can leverage that to buy a cash flowing asset. I see these all the time. So, James, is there anything wrong with having equity in your home? No. No. Is there anything wrong with a HELOC? No. If you can get out of debt, you can get out of debt with a HELOC. No problem. It's a velocity of money, right? And then we're taking advantage of velocity and arbitrage. I understand. Is there anything wrong with velocity? No, heck no. Unless there's, you know, lead coming at you, you know, then that might be a problem. Okay. Is there anything wrong with buying a life insurance policy? No. Is there anything wrong with leveraging the life insurance policy? No. Is there anything wrong with buying a cash flowing asset? No. What I have a problem with is when you string all of these together, mm-hmm. right? And the people don't understand the infinite banking concept, number one. They don't understand the HELOC, number two. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand the value of the equity in their home, right? And then they don't know anything about cash flowing assets. Yeah. And then the promoters, a group of them normally is what I see. Maybe one guy and he's referring out. He's just creating his four revenue streams of income. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, is this 100% always the way it is? No, I'm not even saying that. This is what I see, and this is what I'm opposed to. He gets a revenue stream, and I'm a capitalist. I'm not against commissions, revenue streams, or profits at all. Right. Okay. But here this guy gets paid for the mortgage, the note on his HELOC, right? His equity. He gets the revenue stream from the HELOC. He gets a revenue stream from the life insurance policy. Then he gets a revenue stream from the asset that they're selling, which is, you know, some type of real estate most time, cash flowing assets. Is there anything wrong with that? No, it's a combination of all of that. And there's no understanding half the time from the advisors whenever they build these jankly structured policies that are not going to serve the client well. And the client doesn't understand real estate, and they've not. And I'm not being disparaging. I'm not making a moral judgment. That's what I do not like.
Right. It's when they don't have the full education of what they're walking themselves into. They have no experience. Right. And so, yeah, it works perfect until it doesn't.
Yeah, that's right.
It works perfect until somebody doesn't pay the rent.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, like 10 years ago, it seems like everybody was going to their mom and dad or their grandfather, or grandmother or whatever and saying, hey, you know, I want to be in the real estate business, the son, the daughter, whatever, the grandchild. Yeah. I want to be a flipper, you know, I want to mm-hmm. fix and flip homes. I don't have any capital. And you go to all these real estate programs that show you how to raise your revenue and it's, oh, go talk to your family and your friends and get them to do a self-directed IRA. And the consumer didn't know anything about them. And then loan me the money to fix and flip. I don't know how many train wrecks I've seen from that.
Man.
I mean, you know.
I have no experience. I just, you know, stayed in Holiday Inn Express last night and went to a conference.
It's, oh my gosh.
And I'm not saying people can't do that. No, I'm not saying people can't do that. But let's just be real. You don't have any experience.
It's the education.
When you hit the wall on the thing you don't know to do, You gotta go find somebody to pay to do that thing.
Yeah.
And how much is that going to cost you? And did you account for that in your structure?
Yeah. What did it? I don't know. I don't recall David talking about that. You know, I mean, it's like I've slept since then many times. But did he get into the results of that young lady, or was it she lost all of these assets?
What I remember him saying, mm-hmm. and I don't know if I was just in my head at that point because it was hitting me like a ton of bricks, because I was like, that could have been me. What a disaster that would have been. I was under the impression that he couldn't fix it and he didn't know how and he didn't know what to do for her, and that she ended up losing it all.
I think fundamentally and basically, you know, if you build capital, and that should be the focus, you know, but other than self-improvement, health, education, your experiences, and, you know, you are your number one asset, period. You are your number one investment, period. When it comes to financial tools or financials, money, family finance, retirement planning, you know, personal finance, personal planning, estate plan, all of that. The focus should be, in my opinion, the fundamental, the basics is capital formation, capital accumulation, capital, capital, capital. Capital, as you said earlier, and I agree and repeat it often, attracts opportunities. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about becoming your own banker, the bank, the primary resource of a bank, the primary capital of a bank is money. Yes, they can leverage it. Yes, it's the Babylonian banking system. No question it's perverted, but it's money. So the focus should be on self-improvement. In my opinion, my encouragement would be self-improvement and capital formation. Capital, capital, capital. If you spend your time educating yourself on how to do that, and then the discipline of actually doing that, then opportunities do appear. How do they appear? Ryan Griggs and I have talked about that many times. It's the way your perception has changed. Yeah. Things are either a legitimate opportunity or they're not. But they appear because now you have capital to take advantage of an opportunity. Right. So very fundamental, capital formation. capital formation. That's where the education and the focus should begin, and it should remain for a time period.
Right. And this is something where you have to teach yourself and your family, and you have to keep it in house, because most people are going to tell you, you just do this. Like, okay, are you doing that? And how is that working for you? Like, prove it to me, you know? Don't just tell me that that's what I should do when I know you're not doing it. I know you're not doing it. So if
she's not talking to me, y'all. She's looking at me, but she ain't talking to me. I'm doing it.
So I came to man who's doing it, right? I watched his presentations on doing it.
Yeah.
How to make sure this works.
Thank you.
And I was like, yeah, okay, I see it. So,
well, looking back, do you feel good about what you've done?
I am so grateful. I am just blown away, because I would have been lost at sea out there.
Now, if somebody's listening and saying, oh, yeah, Liz, that's great. You're only 3.5 years into it. You know, what does the future look like for you? I mean, and the future is unknown, and I get it. But the
thing about the future, it kind of gets to that whole you can laugh about tomorrow, because tomorrow's got enough worries for itself. And I know that when the opportunities come along and they're presented, and I can calmly, because I'm not desperate, I don't have a desperation for the need. I can calmly think about what you're saying, consider it, and do my own research and think it through. And then I'm like, this seems like there's a very, very generous upside to participating in this, and I'm willing to partner up and do that. And I mean, it really is just a matter of time before the right thing comes and knocks on your door. And you don't know when that's going to happen, but you're able to say yes because you have control. That was the most frustrating thing when I left that career job, is if I wanted access to the capital I had accumulated, I was going to have to take a 10% hit to get to it. Mm-hmm. I was going to get penalized. That was my money. I'd earned it. I'm penalized. I'm separated from it. It goes up and down without any control on my, I have no control over what happens with that money. You know, so yeah, you can take a little bit more risk on a riskier opportunity, but you can take a risk with, oh, well, you know, I can put this much here and this is a small percentage to try that out and see what happens.
After you've done the vetting.
After I've done the vetting. After I've got my capital. After I've got... But this is the biggest thing in my heart about seeing what's happening and meeting all the people that I'm talking to now, who are just looking for ways to make more money and get out of debt or pay for this or pay for that, or shoot, their groceries are now like twice what they were a year ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's going to get worse. And... You know, and the only option most people have, because they don't have any retirement to even go take a 10% penalty to take a chance on something that can make them more than enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's heartbreaking. They don't even have that to leverage. And I think about, you know, if you just had a life insurance policy that had been started for you when you were a kid, you could have bet on yourself and not bat an eye.
Yeah.
Not bat an eye about it. And even, do you have something for later? Or are you just living life, c'est la vie, and we'll see what happens? Because the narrative is don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
You're young.
And it's not good. It's not good, because at some point people just get so overwhelmed and they just go, I give up. And that, I don't want that for people.
Burn it all down, start over. It's like the exponential curve
can
be stopped at any time, as often as you wish. And with every stop comes a restart.
Right.
And then it's so...
You get older and you're like, I'm not as young as I used to be. It's harder to get up off the ground. Like, I don't really want to do that anymore. You know, like, I'm tired.
Earlier, huh? I'm tired earlier in the day than I used to be.
What is going on?
Anything else you'd like to cover? We've gone about like an hour and a half.
I know. I was looking at your clock there.
Oh, wow.
Man, we've been talking.
Well, that's what happens when you get...
It's so much fun.
It is. I've greatly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So have we checked all your boxes?
Like the things that I was like, definitely we need to talk about these.
Perfect.
I felt like we had some really good conversation there.
I think this is lovely. I think that, you know, if people would wish to listen, they'll learn something, maybe entertained. I don't know. I don't come here to entertain, but, you know, I came here to see you, man.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming down here and, you know, spending the time and
thank you making so much. Effort. No.
All right. Well, we'll just end it here. Thank you, Liz. I appreciate you and thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.